and I rode a swirly-whirly.
Did you like it, Doc?
I fear not, my dear Mildred. I went with my friend, Douglas Chapman. Douglas was sick in an omnibus, and I was sick in my hat.
Kelly looked around.
Keep the noise down, people. We're not far from Center Point.
They'd gone by the undersea cruise and the Pharaoh's Curse, past what had once been some kind of fast food eatery, but was now a sec base. Paraglide Paradise was a huge tower with chutes clipped onto steel cables. A massive ship hung from a sort of pendulum. The name on the sign was Billy Bones Brain Basher.
Hey, Kelly.
Yo!
Who goes on all these rides?
Boss Larry.
Nobody else?
Sure. Friends and helpers.
Dr. Fibes' House of Mystery and Illusion was a cave-like attraction, with its entrance designed to look like the rot-toothed jaws of a scabrous skull. Next to it was Mehitabel's Carousel. A sign near a low gate read, "If you are too tall to go through here without stooping, then you don't get to ride the ride. Sorry." Ryan noticed that his son was, despite his natural reserve, becoming entranced by the wonders he saw offered on every side. He was now talking animatedly to the sec man, tugging at his sleeve to attract his attention. Kelly turned around once and saw Ryan watching him speaking to Dean. The sec man's lips curled into something like a merry smile, but his eyes remained as cold as Sierra meltwater.
How much farther to meet the Baron?
That's Center Point up ahead.
Now they could see their destination. It was a tower about 200 feet high, with a wider part on its top, which, Ryan noticed, appeared to be revolving slowly in a clockwise direction. It was filled with windows. It was an amazing structure, and it seemed to be in perfect condition. Kelly held up a hand, and the patrol stopped smartly. The prisoners shuffled to a less formal halt.
How come all this stuff before the Long Winters is still standing?
You guys ask a lot of questions, little lady. Better save them for Boss Larry. But I can tell you the answer is neutron bombs. Not that a pretty filly like you'll have heard of those beauties.
Don't be a double stoop. Bombs that kill life and leave buildings.
Well, yeah.
There were two light machine gun emplacements on either side of the entrance. Inside, Ryan could make out at least a dozen more sec men standing around. He glanced behind, seeing the oddly deserted paths winding among the greenery. The sky was an almost colorless blue, and the intense humidity of the early morning had abated.
Ready, people! Boss Larry's up top this time of day, watching his world go by. So we'll all go to him.
Dean rejoined his father.
Kelly says we can maybe go on some of the rides. Wouldn't that be a hot pipe?
Yeah, whatever that is.
There was a bank of six elevators. Kelly took Dean into one of them, his blaster drawn, and resting so casually against the side of the boy's head. The others went separately, each with two of the sec men. It was a fine chance for Ryan to chill the guards with him, but it would have been a pointless exercise. The numerals above the sliding doors clicked all the way to roof. There were more of the guards on the top floor, each dressed in the same camouflage gear, each holding a Colt that was in immaculate condition. The entire tower top was a large circular room with a number of chairs and sofas scattered about it. A few of the windows had draperies of deep purple, but most were uncovered. Ryan noticed some antique vid games on one side, most with screens alight with flickering colors and shapes. An oval table was covered with the remains of a gargantuan breakfast. Polished metal dishes held a few shreds of scrambled egg or a dried rasher of bacon. Another dish, shaped like a tureen, held the scummy dregs of some sort of fish chowder. A pile of pancakes had tumbled wearily in on itself, soaked in a spilled pool of syrup. The air was dusty and filled with a pungent, acrid odor of good grass. Dimly visible, across the far side of the room, was a very large chair, almost as big as a throne in a kid's storybook. It swiveled, but the sunlight left the occupant in darkness.
Outlanders, Boss Larry. Let me introduce them to you.
Two of them I know already from a long time back. John Dix and Ryan Calder. I swore when last we met that I'd kill him when I saw him next, and now I will.
There was only one sound in the stillness of the slowly revolving room.
My knife would be in your eye before either of them hit the floor.
Oh, shit.
Out of the corner of his good eye, Ryan could see that his son had slithered away to the right, drawing the turquoise-hilted knife. To hit the man who sat veiled in black shadow would have tested the edges of even Jack's skill, and the albino boy had been the best with a throwing knife that Ryan had ever seen. Then again, Boss Larry wasn't to know that.
Is that a dwarf or is that a child killing?
It's a kid. Carter's son.
Have you allowed them all to keep their knives, killing?
Yeah, boss. Sorry.
The figure moved slightly.
Yeah, I know the one-eyed man and the small one with the glasses. Put them in a room with six of your best, them just with knives and ours with their colts. I wouldn't give you odds, Kelly, about who would walk from the room. They're two of the most dangerous men in all the length and breadth of Deathlands.
Then Ryan knew him.
Larry Zapp. At least that was what you called yourself back then. Fireblast. It must be at least 10-12 years.
Up on the west side of the Big Lakes. Ran a traveling gaudy. Dozen girls and a couple of wags. Sure.
Same old people. Trader taught you boys well. Never thought you'd both still be living. Deathlands is hard on men like us.
Larry Zapp. The memory came cautiously forward, like a child entering an adult's party, uncertain of its welcome. They'd been up near where Duluth would have been if it hadn't been wiped off the map by a massive earth shift that had sent parts of the lakes flooding southward and westward. The trader had been checking out reports of a baron who discovered a huge store of gasoline and was ready to do some business. In the end, the story had been, as most were, grossly exaggerated. But Larry Zapp had been up there with two wags, converted from Winnebagos, the inside stretched and cut around to provide cubicles for six women in each of the brightly painted vehicles. He had three hired guns who did nothing but sit around drinking cheap liquor and taking some of their wages out in jolt. Every now and again they'd get to kick the shit out of a dissatisfied customer who wanted his jack back. But Zapp ran a good tight gaudy, and trouble didn't come very often. But Ryan remembered, the big man had been greedy. Way back then, Larry had been around 250 pounds, with a shoulder-length mane of greasy hair, and the selling line had been cold beer and hot women. And in most frontier pest holes, that had been all it took. But Larry Zapp had gotten greedy. Who had it been? Was it Hen, the tall black guy with a lacerating sense of humor? Or was it Cone, their radio operator? Ryan couldn't remember, and it didn't much matter. It had been one of the male crew members of Warwag One, that was certain. One of the whores, Bernice, that was her name. Tall, skinny, part Indian with one ear missing. Larry had used her to try to bribe the crewman to betray the trader and his wags to the local baron. The trader had found out about it and sent Ryan and JB as his head honchos to talk to the foolish and greedy Mr. Zapp.
I could have died, you sons of bitches.
You threw the dice. You get snake eyes and you don't whimper for your mommy. You didn't die because we didn't chill you. Simple as that.
And now it's my turn to cast the dice again, John Dix.
Yeah.
Ryan recalled that Larry Zapp had carried a cutthroat razor up his sleeve. He wasn't a man you turned your back on. After they'd called on the brothel keeper, both of his vans had been burned out wrecks, the column of oily smoke rising in an unbroken pillar into the chill fall sky. His girls had fled, accepting the suggestion from Ryan that their health depended on their traveling at least 200 miles in any direction. Two of his watchmen were on their backs, with rain falling in their eyes. The third one had vanished. And Larry Zapp was still alive. He was hurting some, but he was still breathing. Both his elbows were broken, the result of having been kicked by steel-tipped combat boots. Both his knees had gone the same way. One shoulder was dislocated. Both the collarbones had been snapped, several fingers were bent back and swollen, five ribs had given in to the kicking. He'd screamed as they came in after him.
Not my face!
So, they hadn't touched his face. They'd walked away and left him lying crooked and puking in his own blood and piss, but alive. And in the manner of things, the wheel had gone rolling slowly and soundlessly around.